Welcome to this week's episode of Stand Out, How to Grow Your Organizational and Productivity Practice, brought to you by NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. With every episode, we're going to learn from subject matter experts who can help you build your business in areas like marketing, HR, and finance. We'll also introduce you to business owners who are out there just like you are, and we'll learn from their successes and challenges. Please welcome your host, professional organizer, Sarah Karakayan.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stand Out, Growing Your Organizing and Productivity Practice. My name is Sarah Karakayan, and I am your host. And we have one of the most well-rounded business owners I think I've ever come across on today's show. Helene Segura is a certified professional organizer and a NAPO member and is a productivity consultant and time management fixer. She is the author of two Amazon best-selling books and has been the featured productivity expert in over 100 media interviews, including publications such as Women's Day Magazine and Money Magazine, as well as on Fox, CBS, ABC, and NBC affiliates. Helene is a sought-after keynote speaker, empowering stressed-out professionals on the go with the productivity tools to slay wasted time. Before starting her career, though, as a keynote speaker and productivity consultant in 2006, Helene was a, as she calls it, a serial entrepreneur. She was a soccer coach. She wrote screenplays, flipped houses, managed her own rental properties, sold cosmetics, and founded an e-commerce website, all while working full-time as a teacher and even earning a Teacher of the Year honors in her 11th year of teaching. So I think it's safe to say that not only does she have this productivity thing down, but she is one heck of a resource for anyone who is growing their business. So Helene, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
We are so excited to have you. I obviously was reading up on you and your background, and I really want to dig in to how you became a serial entrepreneur. I read that your parents really supported you trying out a bunch of different industries when you were growing up, and you say that kind of helped you become so well-rounded. So let's go back to then and walk us through how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Just like you said, my parents really encouraged us to learn as much as possible about different industries before we headed to college. Now, I didn't realize it at the time, but I finally figured out they wanted us to do that so we wouldn't stay in college forever, constantly changing our major. They wanted us to, because they didn't want to fork out all of that tuition. So they wanted my brother and me to have an idea of what we'd like to do or what we wouldn't like to do in life. So I had so many different jobs throughout high school. I was, the captain of a drive-through in a fast food restaurant. And so I learned a management position when I was 16. And then I was also what's called a utility clerk in a trust department at a bank. And I had to learn 10 different positions in order to fill in for these folks when they went on vacation. And so it was a wonderful experience to work in all of these different companies and businesses. So I could figure out what I wanted to do. I did learn I did not want to sit behind a desk for my entire life. That wasn't my thing. I needed to be up and moving around. I used to be a soccer player, so I realized when I grew up, I couldn't go around tackling people, but I would still like to be able to walk around and not be tethered to a desk. So that was a real important learning moment for me. And then when I got to college, I wanted to become a high-paid lawyer or have some kind of mega millions job when I first got out of college, but my true passion was to become a teacher. And my teachers had always told me, don't become a teacher, you're never going to make money, which is why I wanted that high-paying job first so I could make $1 million, save it, and then when I turned 30, then I'd become a teacher. It didn't quite work out that way. My first job out of college was a really good paying job, but it also sucked the life out of me because I was working 12-hour days and when I was 22, I did not know how to explain to supervisors how this does not work. This is not efficient. This is what you should do instead. So with full support of my then fiance, now husband's family, I quit that job and went into teaching when I was 22 instead of when I was 30.
Wow. Wow. And you were a teacher for quite some time.
Right. I was a teacher for 11 years, and the serial entrepreneur phase entered right around my fifth or sixth year of teaching. And that was in part because I had seen so many teachers walk out of retirement meetings crying because they realized they did not have enough money saved up in order to retire when they wanted to. So I started these little businesses and investments on the side because I did not want to be that teacher in 30 years walking out of that meeting crying. So that's why I started up these different ways of having multiple streams of income.
So it's kind of this out of need of necessity for you to kind of figure out how to set your own self up for success instead of relying on your job. So then how did you balance that? Because, you know, my dad's a teacher, and I know that how much work goes into preparing lesson plans, and then sometimes you're working in after school activities or what have you. So how did you find the time to do all those different side jobs?
Part of the reason why the entrepreneurial spirit really didn't bud until about the sixth or seventh year of teaching was because it took me that long to figure out the ropes. And by then, I was able to establish routines and really understand how I could maximize time, how I could take a base of a lesson plan and be able to modify it for each class without reinventing the wheel each time. I learned how to work with my fellow teachers so that way we could split up tasks. And so be able to be a good teacher and then also run those businesses. The other part of it was that when I was first trying all of this, I realized that I wasn't a good steward of my time personally. So I had my awakening when one evening my husband, he yells from the other side of the house, "Hey, PC junkie, can I make an appointment with you?" And that's when I became focused on not just balancing my time for work and all of these different businesses, but also my personal life, because I couldn't let that suffer just to try to chase all of these other opportunities.
Right, right. So is that kind of when you decided, or when did you decide to put teaching aside and to kind of go full time with this entrepreneur career?
Before, when I decided to leave the classroom, and I had saved up enough money so that if my business fell flat on its face, then I would have enough money for a few months to survive. And I could always go back into teaching. I had really great recommendations from everybody I had worked with. And what happened was that business that I had started a few years prior, that was the e-commerce business that you mentioned. I had started wedding emergency kits. The bottom completely fell out of that business because one of my major vendors completely changed their pricing model, which knocked e-commerce out of the picture because they were trying to also support their brick and mortars. So I actually had to develop yet another business within 6 months of quitting my teaching job. And that's how I got into organizing.
Oh my gosh. And so did you work for someone else? Did you just start a business as an organizer? How did that look?
I started a business as an organizer. It was called Alamo Organizing because I'm located in San Antonio. So how original to call something Alamo. Plus in my studies, I had learned that you should name your business something with an A. So that way you're at the top of the alphabet list.
Right.
So I don't know if that really works anymore, thanks to Google. But at the time I started, the Yellow Pages was still around. So right. I wanted to make sure I was at the top of the list. But I started my own business, and the internet was just starting out, and businesses were just developing websites. And so I did get some clients that way, but it wasn't enough to support our household because I needed my income to pay the bills as well, not just my husband's. And so I decided to go to work for another organizer when she came calling 8 months after I'd started my business. So I closed up Alamo Organizing. I went to work for Living Order, Lori Marrero. She was based in Austin, so I was her San Antonio organizer. And 2 years after I started working for her, she began Clutter Diet, which went global in 2 months. So she sold Living Order San Antonio to me. Wow. And I was back to being a business owner. So I've had all of these different business models, none of which were planned ahead of time, but I just dove in and did the research and figured out how the heck I needed to make things work.
Yeah, it seems to me like you just, instead of waiting for the opportunities to come to you necessarily, you kind of made them happen for yourself. Yes, part of out of necessity, but also kind of out of fearlessness.
Oh, I love that word fearlessness. And I would like to say I was fearless.
Okay.
I would say there definitely was some fear involved, but it was more beating back the fear of not succeeding, which right. is what drove me to make sure that I was successful, because I have seen a lot of people just go down and out because of the choices that they made or not putting quite as much effort into things. And I did not want to be that person. My goal is to have a comfortable life. So I wanted to make sure that I had enough income to do that.
Right. And did you succeed at being able to be there for your husband more often when you finally took over Living Order San Antonio? Or did you still find yourself crazy busy trying to make it succeed?
I would say that I learned that balance before I quit teaching, because if we were going to stay married, then I needed to take a look at that balance. So I would say that happened more in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, before right. I left the classroom in 2004. And at the beginning of taking over Living Order, because it had been 2 years since I was a business owner, I had to learn the ropes a little bit. So I would say I was not quite as busy in the beginning, but once business really started picking up, my husband and I just made it a point. We had to visit our schedule every week, and we had to sit down every single month to talk about how much time does each of us want to spend on different endeavors, and then when will our couple time be to make sure that we're still nurturing our marriage.
Right. Yeah. I know a lot of entrepreneurs, whether they're organizers or even productivity specialists themselves, really struggle with finding that balance in their lives. So I think it's really crucial to know that there are entrepreneurs out there crushing that, and they're still able to spend time with their families and still grow a business.
Yeah. In the beginning, I used to set numeric goals based on what are the minimums that I need to make in order to pay all the bills. What are the minimum number of clients? What are the minimum number of client-based hours versus admin hours? And I was always looking at minimums to make sure I did at least that. And then the next step up would be what would be a nice income to live at. And those are the minimums I need to meet. But as I got busier, I realized I actually needed to set maximums. And that's right. what's really helped with the balance and maintaining relationships. So it's, when you're first starting out and struggling, your minimums are all you want to meet so you can pay the bills. But eventually, when you do have the success, you want to look at the opposite and set those maximums.
I love that. It's kind of like thinking really big, figuring out how amazing your life could be, and then working backwards so you can get there. And even if you don't hit that goal, you're still way above your minimums.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's powerful. So then how did you find your clients when you were growing? I know you said you started out with minimums. So you're like, okay, maybe it's you needed, 4 clients a month. Let's just say that. How did you, and you only had 2 so far, what did you do to find people to work for? What was your strategy?
I did a whole lot of networking. And this may not work in every city, but in San Antonio, this is how businesses survive. It's not just the internet and having the snazziest website. I had to get out and hustle at all these different networking meetings. And even though I have developed my speaking skills, when it comes to networking, I'm actually more of an introvert. I am petrified when I walk into a room full of strangers. And then I need to go talk them into hiring me. That's not my favorite thing to do. So I felt like it took twice as much energy to do that kind of activity because I was out of my comfort zone. But basically, I was hitting at least 3 networking events each week. I learned that a lot of the go-getters I wanted because they started their day early and then tore it up during the day. So I started focusing on breakfast networking meetings. And because I had a set number in my head when I was starting out organizing, I knew that I wanted to go for the certification through BCPO. And I'd figured out that I need to have a minimum of 8 to 10 client hours per week to be able to do that. And by the way, for anybody who doesn't know what BCPO is, it's the Board of Certification for Professional Organizers. It's the only certification that is endorsed by NAPO. So anyway, I knew that when I was trying to book those clients, those were the minimums I needed to meet, those 8 to 10 hours per week. So that's what helped drive me to get to those networking events and make sure I was focusing enough to pick up those hours. But it was a lot of in-person networking that really ramped my business up.
And so you said you went to these networking meetings to find your clients. So are these, who did you speak to? Did you speak to people who could connect you with clients, or are these, was it a business to business organizing that you were doing? Or how did these people that you networked with connect you with the people who were paying you for your services?
In the beginning, I have to say that I was just desperate to pay the bills. So I didn't think about those kinds of connections. I just wanted to, you know, get my business cards, spray them around the room and just hope that somebody picked it up. But eventually I learned that I could save time and get higher quality referrals if I joined a specific networking group that focused on that. And that's how I got involved with BNI, Business Network International. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get person-to-person referrals. So I was getting referrals to the end clients, but I was also getting referrals to people who I shared clients with. So I actually met quite a few therapists that way. I'm not saying that everybody who wants to be organized also needs therapy, but it just so happened that these family therapists who I met, they had a lot of clients who needed organizing help. They needed productivity help. They needed work-life balance help. So I started realizing, wow, if I can team up with people who share the same type of clients I have, well, then we can refer each other. So that's how I built up my referral network.
Wow. That's really, you know, and it's so funny because sometimes I feel fellow organizers will go out there and say, I'm going to be this kind of organizer. And then I'll meet up with them at, you know, conference a year or two later. And their focus kind of is different because those are the people that end up coming to them. It's kind of like you're attracting a certain kind of client after a while, once you start paying attention, you know, to who keeps seeking you out. So, That's really powerful stuff to really pay attention to, kind of who's going to bring you the client at the end of the day. So then you said, you know, getting your certification kind of drove you to those minimum hours. How did you know about the certification, and why was it important for you to get the certification?
I figured out that with a lot of the clients I liked working with, they either had some type of credential in their field or they wanted to work with people who had credentials. So I felt that if I had a credential in the industry that I am working in, that my business is in, then that is going to give me an advantage over anybody else in my metro area who does not have that certification. So I figured, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get the certification. And what I found is that I started attracting clients who were willing to pay my fees without batting an eyelash. Wow. So there weren't people saying, can you cut your rate 75% for me? Or instead of me paying you, I have this dog food business. Can we barter out dog food for your fees? And, you know, I would get all sorts of crazy requests. And I have to be careful with how I word this because I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I know that I will search for a bargain wherever I can, but at the same time, when you're on the receiving end of that and you have to explain to folks, no, I'm sorry, I can't discount that deeply. I still need to pay my mortgage. I still need to pay my gas bill. I still need to pay my electricity bill. It gets old when you constantly have to explain that. And once the certification was there, people did not question that. Those are my fees, and so that's what they need to pay. So it actually saved a whole lot of time on those prospective phone calls because I wasn't having to explain why I have these fees.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I know I'm kind of the same way with other professionals. You kind of say, okay, what's their background like? Are they continuing their education on an ongoing basis? So it makes complete sense. What else about your involvement with NAPO? So did NAPO come first, or did you organize and then discover NAPO? And you know, what about that membership that helped your business other than the certification?
I actually found NAPO at the very beginning. So when I was researching what a professional organizer was and is there an education track you're supposed to take to be called a professional organizer, I found NAPO right away. And I joined up in the beginning, and then I took a hiatus from NAPO when I went to work for Living Order, because way back when, NAPO had planted the seed that they were going to do a group membership. So if somebody has an organizing team, then they'd be able to join. So I let my membership lapse, but then that group membership didn't start up until several years later. So when I became the owner of Living Order San Antonio, that's when I rejoined NAPO and have been a member ever since. But the reason why being a part of NAPO was important, number one, is because when you look at other professions, doctors, engineers, lawyers, those people who have their board certifications or their licensing, they also belong to their national professional organization. That is just the professional thing that you do. So joining NAPO was a given. But then when you do join NAPO, you have all these added benefits. You can take courses. You're able to go to conference at a discount. You can develop relationships with other NAPO members across the country. And Referee offers so many different benefits in addition to helping to spread the word about our industry and making sure that we're constantly keeping, if not raising, standards. And that's something that the public should want as well.
Right. So what is it about building relationships with other organizers that's important in your business? Why is that something that's a benefit?
It's a benefit because you can't be not a competitor. When you're working together all within the same metro area, you want to share some things, but at the same time, if you share absolutely everything, then you're basically giving out your business secrets. But if you can connect with people outside of your geographic region, you can create your own private mastermind, whether it's with one organizer or eight other organizers, and you can openly share information with each other. It's such a great resource to have a wonderful mind sitting across from you, whether it's across the table or across Zoom or across the phone, and just be able to open up and learn new ideas from somebody in a different region or a twist on maybe something that you've been trying but you can't quite figure out. So it's great brainstorming with smart people across the country or across the world, because we have NAPO members outside of the U.S. So it's even cooler to connect with somebody outside of the U.S. and learn a totally different business model, because somebody in the Netherlands or somebody in the UK may have to run their business totally differently than somebody in Alabama.
Right, right. And I think it's so fun to just be able to talk with other people who get you, you know, like people may need our services. They may not understand why we love what we do. So I think it's really valuable just being able to digest that week's, you know, experiences with clients or what have you. So I completely agree. So then you have these two businesses. Is that correct? You've got Living Order San Antonio, and then you have Helene Segura's keynote speaking workshop guru. How do you balance that? Or what does that structure look like?
That is more complicated than it should be, which is really hilarious because I'm into simplicity.
Okay.
The separate speaker website 4 years ago, and when she took a look at my livingorderessay.com website, she said, you know, if I am on the East Coast or the West Coast and I want a speaker, I don't think I'm necessarily going to rush out and hire somebody from San Antonio. So I was really offended when I heard that. I said, hey, there are smart people all over this country, not just on the East Coast and the West Coast. And she said, I know that, but it's a perception thing. So why already plant that barrier when somebody lands on your website? So then I had to create this whole separate speaker website. And my goal over the next 18 months is actually to merge them. So that way, whether you go to livingorderessay.com or HeleneSegura.com, they will have more of the same look. And the Living Order Essay brand will be across both of the websites instead of just the Living Order Essay website. So that is definitely in the works. But when you go to the separate sites right now, you can definitely tell that the Living Order Essay site is purely for the clients in the San Antonio metro area. So it's the personal organizing, productivity, work-life balance, working in offices. And there is some workshop stuff on there, but for the most part, all of the speaking is on the HeleneSegura.com website, which is the national/international website and the consulting side, more for businesses than for individuals. So yes, thank you for pointing out my two separate websites because I really need to get that in gear and consolidate it because to me, it's just a pain in the patootie to have those two different ones.
Well, and from the outside, I'm like, this woman is a business running star because they're both just such a great resource for what you do. So, you know, I'll consider myself a smart person who totally got it. So I'm on that side. But so then, okay, how did you know that you were good at speaking? Like what came first? I mean, obviously the organizing came first. You already said that. But how did you know that you could like rock a workshop or you could have a bunch of corporate employees in a room and keep them awake and alert and actually have them lead the room with bits of productivity information? Like how did you know you were good at that?
That actually goes back to my college days. One of my many jobs was as a resident advisor, and that way I could get a break on the dorm fees as a resident in the dorm. But one of our jobs as a resident advisor was to present workshops. And that's when I started learning how to understand what the objective was that was being taught and then figure out what's the best way to present that information. And then, of course, when I became a teacher, I had to go to all those educational courses where they officially teach you how to figure all of that stuff out. And I figured that if I can talk freshmen into learning Shakespeare and love it, then I can almost teach anybody anything, I think. And so that teaching Gene and me was really awakened because I just love sharing information with people. And if that information can make their life better, then I just get even more passionate about it. So when I started my organizing business, I had been told that if I would give some free workshops, that would be yet another way to pick up clients. And eventually, when I started working with a speaking coach, she said, why have you been doing these free workshops for so long? Do you realize you're giving away your intellectual property? And I said, well, I hadn't looked at it like that before. So that's when I started crafting, because I had done workshops, said, you know what, it's great to be on a keynote stage, but you could really take your trainings across the country and not just stay in San Antonio. So that's when I started working with her and developing the content. And like I said, if I can teach freshmen, then I'm pretty sure I can get adults to listen. I just make sure that it's as fun as possible, but I also use science-based research to make sure they know that I'm not just making stuff up. This is based on neuroscience and psychology.
Right, right. Okay, I have a few more questions about speaking, but we're going to take a really quick break. But when we come back, we're going to dive in a little bit more to this keynote speaking business that you have. So we'll be right back.
The National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals invites you to become a certified professional organizer. CPOs have proven industry proficiency by demonstrating they possess the body of knowledge and experience essential to professional organizing and productivity consulting. The CPO credential identifies professional organizers who've documented a specific number of paid hours that include transferring organizing skills to a client and have also passed the Board of Certification for Professional Organizers Examination. The credential provides the organizing and productivity industry a way to elevate its professional standards. Visit NAPO.net to learn more.
All right, we are back. I have Helene Segura here, and we were just diving in on her discovery that she could, back in her college days, get college freshmen to care about Shakespeare. So she had a hunch she could get corporate employees to care about their productivity levels in their day. And so you took it from free workshops to local keynote speaking and workshops. And then you said, you know what, why do I have to stay local when I can go global? How much of your business is now speaking versus working with clients in their homes or their businesses?
I would say about 30% of my business is based on either the keynotes or the training. So some type of speaking. And then roughly 60% of the business is individual consulting, and that's either in person in San Antonio or virtually by phone with people around the country. And then I'm not really good with math, but that should leave about 10% left, and that 10% would be from the books and the webinars and the other products that I have. So that's pretty much how the business is divided up.
Right. So you've got webinars then that are they always live? Have you figured out how they can be evergreen so you can keep using them, or how does that work?
I have evergreen webinars set up through a platform called Revisit. It's spelled R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T, Revisit. And those can stay evergreen. So it's pretty much like having a whole bunch of webinars on autopilot because they're off to the side. I don't have to manage that platform. Somebody else is in charge of that technology. I just have to get the webinars over to them. So that's been really helpful. I have been a part of live webinars, and what I've learned from that is that I do not enjoy the technology behind it, having to be responsible for the tech and trying to deliver really great information all at the same time. So if I do a live webinar, I am usually the guest of somebody else. So they are handling all of the technology and the glitches and the customer service while I am presenting all of the information. So that way I can just concentrate on the teaching portion.
That is brilliant. Take what you love and do only that. how does one get to be a webinar guest and or be featured in over 100 media interviews? Is that all networking, or do you have someone who helps you find these opportunities? How can our listeners take advantage of that kind of exposure?
That actually started through networking. I was introduced to one media contact from my NAPO colleague and fellow business owner, Lori Marrero. And then also through networking, I met a public relations specialist in San Antonio. And she said, you know what? I think I could have you on one of the morning shows. I need to have somebody booked on there. But in order to appear on this morning show, I want you to go through my media training first. I said, okay. She was willing to have me do this media training for free. You know, other people would pay $1,000 for it. So yes, I agreed to that. And apparently I was the only pupil she'd had who actually did all of the research and called when I was supposed to for a follow-up appointment. So after that, she booked me for everything. When she was talking to a producer and the producer said, I need an organizing segment, or I need a time management segment, or I need this, I need that, this PR person would send the producer my name. So I had media starting to call me, and because they knew that I would show up, I would know what to do, I would not curse on the air, they wouldn't have to, you know, have the dump button ready to go. So I started being a backup to when, if they couldn't fill all of their paid slots, then the producer would call me and say, okay, we have an opening next Tuesday morning. Can you make it in?
Wow. And I'm sure that kind of just catapulted your name locally as the go-to organizer.
It did help some. I was really surprised how many people did not call because of a segment. So I would have people go to my blog because of a segment, but they wouldn't necessarily book all the time. So I was disappointed I didn't get more bookings from the media. But what helped was having all of that media created this resume. It's basically a resume of trust and credibility. So when bigger outlets came calling and they saw the media that was listed there, they figured, okay, we don't have to do much background research on you because we see that all these other people have asked you to interview. And then when podcasting started growing, podcasters would stop by the media page and say, oh, wow, okay, you've been in Forbes. I think I could trust you if you've been in Forbes or you've been on, you know, this NBC show. So It just helped build that resume, and that just seemed to snowball into more and more and more. So what's really nice is I don't really seek out the media. People come to my webpage, look at the media, and then I will get interview requests now.
Wow, that's where I want to be. That sounds amazing. And so you said that when you're on the segment, people kind of go to your blog. So then Do you still blog, and how do you feel about that whole world of blogging?
I love to write. However, I don't necessarily like to write blogs.
Uh-huh.
But if you read the research on Google Analytics, Google wants to see new content on your website and not just a page sprayed with keyword, 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 keyword. And there needs to be actual content that a human could take something, away from that. So I do realize that blogs are necessary. I used to call them a necessary evil, but I'm learning they're not so evil. So they're just necessary.
Uh-huh.
And what I found is that it's become easier to write blogs if I just open up my ears to what people are asking.
Yeah.
So when I get asked questions, and it's the second or third time somebody's asked me that, that usually turns into a blog. And so I found that blogs are helpful because not just for SEO purposes so that Google can find your website, but also people learn your personality through your blogs. So I have prospective clients who have landed on the website, they've read my blogs, and they think, you know what, I agree with that way of thinking, I want to go ahead and hire you. Or an event planner, she might want to look at videos, but she can also read through the blogs and say, okay, this is the kind of topic I would like you to teach our conference attendees. I want you to talk about what you wrote in this blog. So the blog has become helpful and therefore necessary. And I try to get 3 or 4 blogs up a month.
Okay, 3 or 4 a month, which is still, I mean, I think that's not a little, that's a lot of blogging. But I've heard that too.
It is a lot of blogging, especially, I was going to say that is a lot of blogging, because if you believe some of the Google news out there that blogs are supposed to be at least 450 words to be considered, you know, legitimate page, 450 words can be a lot to write when you're trying to come up with something each week.
Right. It can be. Do you sit down and write all 3 or 4 in one go? Or is it really just whenever you're inspired that you sit down to write?
A little of both. Once in a while, I will sit on the back porch with a gin and tonic and just crank out 8 blogs. And so I am ready to go for 2 months. I edit sober, but I do enjoy writing when I have my gin and tonic. And when I run out of those 8 blogs, then sometimes it is week by week and I'm thinking, oh, what should I blog about this week? Ideally, I would sit down and batch write and get those 4 to 8 blogs all written in one sitting, but it doesn't always work out like that. So I give myself permission to not have to do that all the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know how important it is too. I keep hearing that over and over again, that Google's spiders are always crawling our websites unless they haven't been updated in a while. So yeah, I know it's important too. It's just kind of tough when writing isn't your favorite thing to do. So then not only blog posts, but you've also written a couple books or a few books. So how did those come about and how do those serve your business?
With the first book, Less Stress for Teachers, it was for the revenue because I wanted to get paid a little something for speaking at that event. But as that book started to sell, I realized, wow, this is a great way to reach people who may not be able to hear me speak in person, and they can still get all of this help. And then Roadmap to Get Organized was for income, but also to help folks out there who, once again, may not be able to see me in person, or it was something I could leave behind with my clients. So, I can't be with a client 24/7, and this book can, so they can always flip back to the book to review something that we have gone over in a session. And then for The Inefficiency Assassin, I wanted to make sure that I got published through a traditional publishing house, because in the speaking industry, there are so many speakers with books. That used to be a separating factor, competitive factor. Oh, do you have a book? Do you not? But now that self-publishing is so widespread, one of the dividing factors can be, was it self-published or were you published by a traditional publishing house? So that's why with the third book, I worked really hard to find a publisher, and I got a literary agent, and that agent is the one who set me up with New World Publishing. So my third book is published through a traditional publishing house. So that is for both credibility and rounding out the services, so that way folks can still get the productivity help that they need.
And how do you balance writing these books with your clients and the speaking gigs that you already have? Do you kind of stop everything and just focus on the book, or what's your process there?
I cannot write for 8 or 10 hours straight or 5 days straight. I know that's not my style. So what I'll normally do is when my husband and I sit down and we look at the schedule for the week, when he knows that he is going to have a heavy grading evening or weekend, because he's an English teacher, so every once in a while he's bringing home 150 essays to grade.
Right.
So I will schedule my writing time while he is grading, so that way I'm getting some writing done, and then he's getting grading done, and we're not interrupting each other while we're trying to get things done, so we both work at the same time. And we usually do that on a Saturday, so it's maybe one Saturday a month, where we grade and write, and we do that until like 2 or 3 o'clock, and then we have our date Saturdays, because we cook these really big meals on Saturday evenings. That's our date, which is really just an excuse to open up a wine bottle, but
right,
it's a great excuse.
Right.
And that'll be, yeah. So that's motivation to get the grading and the writing done, because we can't start that wine and cooking until we finish for the day.
Right. So it's kind of like that light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh yeah. And it's a beautiful light.
Especially on a Saturday night. So then, okay. So you have started a ton of businesses and you are conquering your business. And I have to ask you then, why do you think some entrepreneurs fail, or why some people think about doing it and they never get started? What do you think is the main reason?
As far as never getting started, there's always some kind of fear factor involved, because it can be nerve-wracking or create anxiety, or you create this fear of failing. And there are also a lot of unknowns, and that's another reason why people don't start up a business. But as far as failure goes, once you've started a business, there are different reasons why that can happen. It could be because somebody didn't properly research and find out all the ins and outs of an industry and of a business, so they got blindsided with something that they weren't expecting. It could be because they have spent so much time focusing on one particular area of their business that they didn't look at the other areas. For instance, it's really important to make sure somebody's in charge of accounts receivable and billing, But if you let that fall by the wayside because you're so focused on doing the fun part of the business, helping people or selling or whatever you do, well, when you neglect those other important pieces, then your business can fall by the wayside. You know, I've worked with entrepreneurs who hadn't billed their clients in 6 months. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how can you pay the bills? You need to make sure that's getting done. So, you know, that's something that we have to work on. And other times, you know, people's lives change, their needs change, their desires change. Maybe their heart isn't in the business the way it was before, or maybe family dynamics have changed and they can't do everything that they used to be able to do in the business. So there are a lot of reasons, and you know, I prefer not to call that failure. It's just, it's time to start a new chapter.
Sure. Sure.
Close that one and start a new one.
Right. Just being honest with yourself. So then you said for 2018 or the next 18 months that you really want to focus on changing up your two websites and be merging them and figuring out what that means to you. What else would you say your goal is for 2018? Since I'm kind of speaking here to the established organizers and productivity specialists, what sort of things are you kind of looking for growing your business in the next year?
For 2018, something that will be done tomorrow, because it's on my list to do, is revisit the numbers that I was talking about earlier. What are my maximums? So I'll be sitting down and taking a look at my maximum in-person clients, my maximum speaking clients, and my maximum phone clients. And then project-wise, the big one is getting ready for a Camino walk that we're going to be doing in 2019. The Camino de Santiago is a pilgrimage that ends in northwestern Spain. And the company who my husband and I traveled with 6 years ago, the owner approached me about doing a seminar over there along the Camino, doing some kind of time management productivity seminar. And I told him, you know, one of the things that I loved about the Camino was the peace that I felt while I was walking on this journey. So I don't think I want to do a seminar there. Would you be okay if I do a virtual seminar before we leave on the trip? So that way people are ready and they don't have to be connected to their devices while we're gone. He said, yeah, go for it. So a lot of 2018 will be developing that virtual seminar and then actually starting the seminar this summer. So that way people will be ready in starting summer of 2018, learning throughout 2018, 2019, and then we go on the pilgrimage in 2019.
Wow. That's really exciting.
Yeah, we've already sold 13 out of the 15 slots 2 years ahead of time. So we're pretty excited.
Oh my gosh, it's going to be huge. Very cool. So this has been a really great interview. Where can our listeners find more about you or even maybe connect with you? What's your preferred form of connection?
Actually, any type of connection is fine, and everybody can take their pick at my speaker website. That would be Helene, H-E-L-E-N-E, Segura, S-E-G-U-R-A.com. And I have a connect page, so you can choose if you want to connect by Twitter or go to my Facebook page, connect on Pinterest, however you like. And at the bottom of the website page, you'll see that there is a complimentary productivity kit. So if anybody wants to sign up for a productivity kit, they will get one by email.
That's great. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know that you have given me a lot of great tips and things to think about for my future as a business owner. So I really appreciate your time.
It's been my pleasure, Sarah. Thank you for inviting me on.
So listeners, how about you? What did you take away from today's interview? I know that, you know, between speaking and writing books, there are so many ways for us to get out there and connect with our clients and businesses and grow as an individual, as a professional, as an entrepreneur. If there's anything that you really took away from this interview, we would love to hear about it. So please reach out to us. We want to celebrate with you. Other than that, I'm Sarah Karakayan, and this wraps up this episode of Stand Out. Thank you for being here with me and learning with me. If you like this podcast and you're able to walk away with nuggets of information or inspiration, we ask that you please leave us a review and hit that subscribe button. We'd like to reach as many productivity and organizing specialists as possible. And if you'd like to also share this with your coworkers, with clients or someone who you know might be interested in this career path, then we would love to be that source of inspiration for them. But for now, I thank you again for your time, and I will see you on our next episode. Again, my name is Sarah Karakayan, and this is a episode of Stand Out, Growing Your Organizational and Productivity Practice. I'll talk to you soon.
That's all for this episode of Stand Out, brought to you by the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. Be sure to visit napo.net to learn more about our educational offerings, our local chapters, and both certification and certificate opportunities. Don't miss an episode as we help you build the business you've always dreamed of owning. Ba-da-ba-da.